From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 15th day of November 2011. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Tom Doerr will be here from the U.S. Grains Council. Actually, I recorded him last week while I was at the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention. Some interesting topics with him as it pertains to corn exports and world production of corn. And we'll also talk today with the folks at True Point Cooperative in Botkins, Ohio. John Lighty joins us from time to time to take up the cash grain market from Ohio, as it has lagged well behind the rest of the Midwest in its production of corn and soybeans so far this year. And it all happens right here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
In Chicago, on this Tuesday afternoon, futures finished the day higher. December soft red winter wheat, a $6.32¾ settlement price, up 17. The May at 6.64, up 6.5. In July, the harvest month at $6.78½. In the soft red, 6 higher. Hard red July in Kansas City at $7.32, up 10.5. December corn futures back in Chicago, a 12-cent gain, 6.45¾ the high. The low at 6.31¼. Settlement price again at 6.45½, up 12 cents for December corn. Once again, $6.45½ the final trade in December, up 12. March contract, 6.54¾, a settlement price, up 11.5. May at 6.60½, up 11.25. July, 6.63, 11¾ higher. December corn up next year, 5.83½. That finished the day, 10½ cents higher. January soybeans, $12.25, up 22. March at 12.10¼, up 21.5. May 12.19¾, 20¾ higher. July 12.28¼, up 20.5. And November of next year at $12.11¼, 18¼ higher in the bean pit. December bean meal at $301.40, up 2.20. December bean oil at $52.60, $1.38 higher. Live cattle futures finished the nearby December at 121.72½, up $1.62½. February at 124¼, $1.82½ higher. November feeders at 143.50, 97½ cents higher. January at 148.37½, up $2.57½. And the lean hogs February contract, $89.80, up 90 cents per 100 pounds. Back in a couple of minutes. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. December crude oil at $99.45, finished $1.31 higher for the day. The ethanol at $2.68, up 2½ cents. Natural gas at $3.41½, that finished 0.4 cents higher. And heating oil at $3.17¾, up 1¼ cents. Gold futures at $1,781.70 an ounce, $3.90 higher. The Dow at 12,133. 54 points higher. The dollar at 77.87, up 0.3. The CRB index at 320.87, that's 2.95 higher. And the S&P 500 at 1,261, up 9.57 for the day. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. Yet sunny skies, a high of just 66 degrees, southwest winds at 10 to 15 miles an hour, gusting to 24 tonight. Mostly clear, a low of 33, south-southwest winds at 9 to 13. They'll come out of the northwest eventually. Winds could gust as high as 20. Wednesday night, mostly sunny, or Wednesday, mostly sunny, a high of 46. North-northwest winds between 8 and 14, gusting to 21. And Wednesday night, a chance of, get this, flurries, that's right, flurries after midnight, partly cloudy. A low of 28 degrees. West-northwest winds at about 7 miles an hour. On Thursday, sunny skies, a high of 43. Thursday night, clear and 33. Friday, sunny, breezy, a high of 51. Friday night, mostly cloudy and a low of 42. Saturday, cloudy and breezy, a high of 57. Saturday night, a chance of showers, mostly cloudy, breezy, a low of 42 degrees. And Sunday, partly sunny skies, a high near 50 degrees. Sunday night, mostly cloudy, a low of 36. And on Monday, a chance of showers of next week, mostly cloudy, a high near 46 degrees. More on the weather when we get to the bottom of the half hour.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
On the phone line with us to take a look during the closing market report at the commodity markets in Chicago is Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Wayne.
Oh, good afternoon, Todd.
It's a nice day in Chicago. If you'd like the markets to move higher, and mostly farmers think that's a good idea, tell me about how it happened.
Well, you know, as for today, the market seemed to shrug off what we considered bearish news yesterday about the European economy and how even after Italy and Greece jumped through all the hoops and done every trick we expected them to do, they still wanted to be a little bit negative yesterday. We seemed to shrug that off when we got some of our news this morning. And along with the crude oil bouncing up right next to that $100 mark again today, why we saw a little rebound in the corn and the beans, especially in the beans, sparked a little bit by rumors that China is here looking and has offers under the market to buy, and that Taiwan was tendering for some beans here for the December-January type shipment.
Are the rumors well-founded?
I think the rumors that China is interested are well-founded, and I think that the it's definitely some offers being taken by Taiwan is putting out for offers.
The Asian countries in a little later than they have been the last couple of years, but not out of realm of when they usually start their buying purchases, right?
October, November is generally two of their big months of purchasing here, Todd. What we have to remember is there's a lot of beans that were rolled forward from purchases of last year that looks like we're behind on our sales here. But if you looked at the shipments here this week on Monday, why we did ship an awful lot of beans to China. We're loaded out to go to China here this week.
Does it give you any more thoughts that this bean market can rally any higher, or is it just...
Well, you know, as we look at the bean market, one of the things the technical traders are saying that where you should run into trend line resistance up in the 1210 to 1215 area, Todd, and it might take some confirmation of some purchases rather than just the rumors, you know, to take us through those tomorrow. But, you know, along the way, the beans, there's two things that's going on. We had a lot of long corn, short bean spreads that have been unwound the last couple days. We had, you know, looking at the beans, the carry is still there. And it looks like we are seeing a little activity on trying to have some exports pick up a little bit. Also, the Chinese news that they were probably going to import more beans than had been on the last balance sheet from WASDE for the their imports for the year for 2012 gives us a little hope on that attitude, too. And the corn-bean ratio was a little bit out of line, way favoring planting corn over beans.
What are you hearing about the cash market as you move to the east of you? Producers in Ohio finally have reached the halfway mark in their corn harvest.
Yeah, you know, we noticed just local elevators here, not processors, just local little elevators were three over for corn this afternoon. You know, an overbid here in the middle of November at a local elevator is just about unheard of, Todd. So the corn deficit areas, which is central Indiana around the ethanol plants and processing plants here, the basis has just been about the best I've ever seen it in my lifetime.
No, that's because you're short supply there and short local supply, right?
Yeah, I mean, basically our yields were not terrible, but they weren't up to a trend line by any means, and we have so much usage in this area from the ethanol plants in Lafayette, Linden, and Chalmers, and, of course, down in Cloverdale. So a lot of ethanol corn being needed in our area.
What do you think the fix for that is with the ethanol? And one of them would be the possibility that the ethanol plants will simply slow down their grind.
Well, you know, everybody's going to keep top grind now through the end of the year because we know that blending credit's going to go away.
Right.
And they want to, so we're going to overproduce, or we're going to produce at max through the end of the year to get that.
No overproduce? You might be right. Will they shut down at the end of the year?
They won't shut down. No, we might cut back from 110% of what we can do to some lower levels. But right now, when we're staring at right next to $100 crude, I don't think we need to be slowing down any of the ethanol production at all. What we will do, Todd, is we will import corn There will be trains and what bought from other areas that will come into this area.
Import corn, you mean from other areas.
Import from Iowa. You know, when you bring Iowa corn into Indiana, that's an import, Todd.
you import corn into the U.S. and somebody probably will be in big trouble, is my guess.
No, from Illinois and Iowa.
Okay, as long as it comes from one of the I states, we might be okay. Even if it comes from an O state, it probably would be all right, I suspect. Anything else we need to talk about in the commodity markets?
You know, we are looking. I think that a lot of farmers are looking if we get back over $6 on the new Dease crop corn. To maybe do a little hedging and cover some of their input costs. So we think there'll be some pretty stiff resistance getting through the $6 mark on the Dease 12 corn. And, you know, I think back if we'd get up around $12.50, we'll probably see some more bean sales by farmers.
Thank you so much for taking the time with us.
Thanks, Todd.
That's Wayne Nelson. He's with L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Tuesday afternoon. You can always hear Wayne again if you'd like off our website. The address is willag.org. If you listen on a mobile phone, you can do that if it's a smartphone at m.willag.org. The M, of course, stands for mobile. Support comes from the Farm Doc Project at the University of Illinois, holding a series of five Illinois Farm Economics Summit meetings December 12th through the 16th to discuss and analyze the most pressing economic issues facing Illinois producers. Registration and details on their website, farmdoc.illinois.edu. Well, up next, as you're probably well aware, last week I spent a few days in Kansas City at the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention. Had the opportunity to catch up with Tom Doerr from the U.S. Grains Council. We took up the Farm Bill and U.S. grain exports for corn in particular. We're in the midst of a Farm Bill. But we haven't really gotten serious about one item in the Farm Bill. We deal mostly with domestic issues. We don't deal with trade and trade policy as often maybe as we should, and we don't even focus on that all the time. We leave that to many folks like yourself and the businesses, the ADMs, the Cargills, the Louis Dreyfuses of the world, to work out trade and how U.S. commodities move from one place to the other. In this case, we're talking about coarse grains, but most of the people in the world do not live in the United States.
No, you're absolutely right, Todd. And I think the significant issue here is that we've experienced 10 years of growth in the corn industry, and we're responsible for international market development for corn and sorghum and barley and DDGs. I think we have to be fair and acknowledge that the last 10 years has seen incredible growth in the ethanol industry. And what that has facilitated, I think, is the ability to kind of take your eye off the ball of what's going on in the international arena. Simple fact of the matter is 95% of the population lives outside the United States. 2.5 to 3 billion people live in the subcontinent area as well as in Asia, East and Southeast Asia. Those people are gravitating from $2 a day incomes to $10 a day incomes. They've had substantial economic growth, and it means they want access to improved high-quality protein diets. What that ultimately determines is that there will be an increased need for not just commodities, but all food products in these international markets. One of the problems you have is that most people outside the U.S. Define food security as food self-sufficiency. But when their economies grow and their ability to produce, their ability to consume exceeds their ability to produce, they tend to, under the guise of food self-sufficiency, get very protective. If we don't have a well-thought-out, rules-based, and well-defined trading regimen, it makes it very difficult for us to engage in these trade opportunities. I would point out a couple of things. Number one, we have nanotechnology, biotechnology, and human genomics on platforms that are stable enough at this point that I tend to equate them to putting us in the food industry about where we were in the computer industry in 1980. When you have this foundation of demand and you have these technologies in place and you have a whole new arena and ethnic group of folks looking at these opportunities, there's a huge economic portal here that we either can make a decision we're going to capitalize on or we can miss the boat. And I would suggest that this is an extraordinary opportunity to begin focusing on these, and in doing that, to realize that all policies have to be developed in conjunction with how they're going to fit in an international trade regimen.
You've obviously put some thought into this. What policies need to be changed and or developed to make that happen?
I don't know that I know exactly where you would start, but I would make this observation. The Doha round of WTO is pretty well disintegrated. It's non-existent. What happened when we started 10 years ago, the countries, the BRICS, the Brazil, Russia, India, and China, were truly categorized, I think, legitimately as developing countries. The economic growth that's taken place since then, they're clearly not developing countries anymore. We don't know where to put them. But what we have to do is begin to have a more aggressive dialogue, both within this country and with partners, to decide how we're going to divide this up in terms of negotiable segments, so that we can begin having realistic conversations about what it is that we have to do to begin working gradually toward these. The tough thing about trade is that when I go back to saying, you know, everybody views food security largely as food self-sufficiency, as they gain economic prowess, as they gain the economic power to improve their diets, they still are very, very insecure about it. And that simply means that they throw up policies, sanitary, phytosanitary, non-tariff trade barriers, and it's very difficult for us in the United States to understand it. The simple fact of the matter is we have to learn how to understand it so we can begin to negotiate our way around them in ways that develop relationships that are built on trust, sustainability, and responsible business-like practices. And if we listen to guys like Jeff Simmons of Landco Animal Health, and he said, you know, really, the bottom line is you have to communicate, you have to get into somebody else's shoes, and if you do that, you can end up carving out an opportunity for yourself without having to give the farm away.
This is a distribution problem you're hoping to solve, but it's much more than that, relatively speaking, because you're wanting to operate across the globe and you said carve up, but finding ways to maybe move grain in sectors, in a series of countries, much more freely than we already have, by developing a set of rules by which trade can happen without roadblocks being thrown up. The phytosanitaries are continually thrown up by China, other places that are protecting their own industries.
Well, you're exactly right. And the thing is that technology and distribution systems and logistics systems still continue to emerge. I'll give you one example. Your folks in the Illinois corn industry have been involved and have been focused on this for a long time, and that is the infrastructure challenges necessary to move grain. But the council's vice president for membership was in Panama a week and a half or 2 weeks ago. He looked at the new channel. He looked at the new lock. Guess what? They can now accommodate a ship that will be able to hold 12,000 containers through that lock. You know what the biggest ship that can hold the most amount of containers is right now today? One that holds 4,000 containers. You're going to be able to build a boat that holds three times the number of containers that the largest boat today can hold. What does that suggest? That changes the entire thinking about use of containers and distribution and logistics systems. What does that indicate, for example, for Illinois corn producers? All at once, you can be developing new processes, new products built around new technologies that might allow you to send significantly higher value products in the international marketplace, creating more of the value at home and still giving someone a more cost-effective food product. All of those things are beginning, they're in place, they're taking shape. All we need to do is to get serious about at least recognizing that's taking place and deciding we want to get serious about how we're going to engage in this opportunity.
That's Tom Doerr with the U.S. Grains Council based out of Washington, D.C. I spoke with him last week at the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention in Kansas City.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 95 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
This is the closing market report on a Tuesday afternoon. Time to check the cash grain market. John Lighty of TruePoint Grain in Botkins, Ohio, joins us from time to time to discuss what's been happening in his area of the world. He's just north of Dayton and along the west side of Ohio. Thanks, John, for taking the time with us again today. We do appreciate
sure.
that.
Sure.
So as of the USDA's NAS report on Monday, we know that farmers in the state of Ohio are still behind. About 55% of the crop, corn crop that is, had been harvested as of Sunday of last week. That's way behind where you normally are. But I don't think there's much concern that the crop is in bad shape. In fact, it appears that it's getting even in better shape than it had been, and that producers are happy with the yields. Can you update us on what's been happening?
Yes. We just really got a good start into corn harvest last week here. It started to look like corn harvest here at the end of last week. The ground had finally got to a point where we could get on it because we have been wet. And unfortunately, yesterday we received 2 to 4 inches of rain across much of our drawing area around here. So we're out for the rest of this week and maybe even beyond. But I would say that 55% is right on that's where we feel we are in our draw area from south of Dayton to north of Dayton. And the yields have been extraordinary. Most of this corn around here was put out the first week in June, and we're seeing yields from 150 to 210, and it's just it's amazing. It's nothing short of a miracle. Everyone is very pleased. Moisture has been high. I would say the receipts that we took in over the weekend probably averaged 24% moisture, so that's way above what guys are usually used to harvesting, but you know, it's getting late in the season, it's time to get it out. So, you know, the dry down from here on out isn't going to be that significant. So guys are going after it and paying the drying charges.
I've heard not only that your yields are good, but the corn is actually very good corn as well.
The corn is standing good and the quality is good. We're probably averaging 56 test weights on this corn. So yes, it's, you know, we thought we had a hot summer, which we did, but those extra degree days probably helped us here in the long run, and had some late summer rains to finish the crop. And like I said, we'll give the Lord the credit on this one.
What's the discussion about this being out for a week and not getting in again?
It's disheartening. Here we are a week before Thanksgiving, and this could have been a really big week for us, and now you know we're destined to harvest this crop now between Thanksgiving and Christmas, if it dries off. And you know, this time of year, your drying day, your harvesting days aren't the greatest, so we're going to drag this thing out a ways.
And then, have you thought much about what this means? And I bet you have, because you have 26, is that right, elevators or cooperatives?
Yes.
In TruePoint, about what the late harvest and the fact that much grain has come out of Indiana, Illinois' eastern side, and serviced a good portion of your marketplace into the southwest, and how that will pile up and what it means for basis.
Well, I think what we're seeing right now is a very tight basis on this corn. You know, the feed market and the ethanol market is still, their appetite is still not being demanded. We've been unable to break that market here at the train houses. We're bidding five over the deece for corn delivered, you know, on the spot market. Our feed mills are bidding 25 over the December, and you know, those are tremendous levels, and we keep thinking we'll get to a point where we can break these basis levels, but that hasn't happened yet. And you know, the farmers are pretty tight-fisted too. You know, we've, you know, flat price tonight, we're at $6.50, but you know, we spent most of the year last year above $7 and had a couple shots at $8. And
John, stay with me. I've got to make a station break. We'll be back in just a couple minutes. We'll say goodbye to some of the rest of you.
Okay,
now we can continue on, John. I just had a few commercial stations that we let go there at that time, but I wanted to stay with you and continue this conversation. So you really got a tight basis. You're still at overs,
yes.
too?
Yeah, we're still at overs here. And makes you wonder whether we'll ever get under with with the harvest, the way it's going to play out, you know, it's going to be slow from here on out. So this basis could stay tight, and I don't know that I've ever seen one quite like this.
Right. So my question really is, because you're so late, you've got half of a crop yet to mm-hmm. come in. At this point, you've got, I assume, a big crop for Ohio. Is that right?
Yes, yes.
Are you concerned at all that you won't have a place to take it to the Southwest and that it will back up and once you get into April, May, June, July, and you'll have an awful lot of corn left in your area? Or will you be able to ship it, do you think, to the West and to Indiana and some of the ethanol plants to that direction?
I think the ethanol plants will be aggressive here locally throughout the year. I really do. But I don't see the Southeast market going away. Space-wise, we're in good shape. We've loaded several trains, and we're ready for round two whenever it happens.
Okay. Well, thank you for the correction on Southwest, Southeast. I know I said Southwest, so you go to the Southeast, and I know better. Hey, what are your bids for the day?
Tonight on corn, we're five over at 650 flat price. Our January bid is 656. So as you can see, not much carry there. Nearby beans, we're 35 under the Jan at 1166. January delivery, 1170.
Thanks so much, John.
Okie doke.
You have a good day. John Lighty is with True Point Cooperative. They operate 26 elevators in the western side of Ohio.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 95 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Tuesday afternoon. Don Day of Day Weather from Cheyenne, Wyoming, on the phone line with us. Don, thanks so much for taking the time. Take us through the Midwest first. Start with Ohio. They have half their corn crop yet to bring in.
Well, I tell you, it has been pretty tough for Ohio in many areas of that region. As storminess has been kind of picking on Ohio, eastern sections of Indiana and the eastern side of the Corn Belt. Wouldn't you know it, it does look like, unfortunately, that's going to be the trend going forward here, at least for the next week to 10 days. There are going to be other systems scooting along the Midwest and Corn Belt and affecting especially the southern and eastern portions of Ohio. We see them getting rained on beginning tonight and into the day tomorrow. They'll have a bit of a break, and then we're going to start to see the chances of rain return by Sunday into Monday. So there's going to be some gaps in between the precipitation, but there are still going to be at least two or three more chances of Ohio getting wet over the next week.
Have they been saturated with rainfall and wet soils in one or the other part of Ohio over the last several weeks? I read that in their updates from the crop weather yesterday, but I didn't know whether that was the southern or northern end of the state.
The southern and eastern areas have been most impacted, and that's going to be the track of these systems going on. So we got to hope that at least in between these systems that there'll be a little bit of drying. The only really good news is that the frequency of these systems, while there could be two or three in the next week, they will be quick-moving systems. So hopefully that'll keep precipitation amounts down. But there are still going to be some delays getting that harvest in Ohio.
Any other concerns in the United States at this time?
Well, I do have a little good news for some of the southern plains. It does look like there could be some more precipitation for those areas as we head into next week. Portions of Texas, portions of Oklahoma, some of those southern plains areas have got more chances next week as we get into Thanksgiving week for some more needed moisture.
And then turn your attention southward, please.
Well, let's take a look at South America first. And it looks like the trend that they've had lately, which has been for some pretty decent chances for rain for both Argentina and Brazil, that's going to continue. The wettest areas will be in Brazil, but overall it looks favorable, not only for precipitation, but temperatures not hot, not cold. We call this a Goldilocks forecast. Temperatures pretty close to normal, just about right.
Any place else around the globe that we need to talk about before I let you go for the day?
Good rain for many areas of Australia as well.
Thanks so much, Don.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
Well, that wraps up this edition of the Closing Market Report for Tuesday afternoon. Thanks for being with us. Remember, you can always hear it again if you'd like on our website. It'll be posted there by about 3:15 Central Time today.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/farmerview.